British Sky Broadcasting presents a World International Networks film, a Baldwin Cohen production in association with STTM Productions of a Claudia Hoover film, Gideon. Starring Christopher Lambert as Gideon, Shelley Winters, Shirley Jones, Mike Connors, Charlton Heston, Carol O'Connor and Taylor Nichols. With music by Anthony Marinelli, written by Brad Merman and directed by Claudia Hoover, Gideon tells the story of a young man enrolled in a retirement home where his actions enthrall and amaze the residents. In helping others, Gideon hides a secret that will affect everyone around him. A 40-year-old man wearing a suit and carrying a suitcase shuffles along a dusty road beside a remote wooden shack above which stands a sign reading LAND in large capital letters. He stops and looks up at an enormous electricity pylon and then sits beneath the sign. Unhooking a set of integral legs from the base of his suitcase, the man sets his luggage as a table and opens the lid. He takes out three items and lays them beside him before closing and locking the lid. Picking one of the items up, he carefully unfolds it and lays the pink cloth over the case, neatly smoothing out any wrinkles, and puts a glass on one corner. Amid tree-covered hills bursting with life sits Lakeview Residential Home. A large, whitewashed Mediterranean-style building stands proudly above a neatly tended sloping lawn. Behind one of the large ground floor windows, an elderly lady stares out over the trees. Her arms are folded in peaceful but sad contemplation. Inside, two other residents sit in armchairs, their eyes closed, sleeping. Leading from the main room, a long corridor stretches the length of the building. The floor is flat, dark vinyl, and chairs are set along its sides at regular intervals. An old man shuffles painfully along it with the aid of a walking frame. In another room, two elderly ladies stare blankly at a television screen. On the ground floor of one wing, two residents paint the view through a window while a sedate but officious woman watches them.
Allie, there's too much blue in your trees.
I like blue.
Yes, dear, but art follows life. And trees are green, they're not blue.
It's her painting. If she wants blue trees, what do you care?
Mr. Greer, are you under the impression that you're part of this conversation? Well, since you're not part of the conversation, I suggest you go back to your own work. Come on, honey, I'm waiting. Let me see green trees.
Ellie puts down her blue paintbrush and reluctantly starts to dab the branches with green. In the main room, two men stare at each other across a chessboard.
Let's mate in two moves.
A bearded academic moves a piece and looks at his opponent. Slowly, the grey-haired, portly man opposite leans one hand on the table, rubbing his chin with the other and staring at the board. With a twinkle in his eye, he looks up.
I hate this game.
That's because you refuse to follow its inner workings.
Let's play some gin, huh?
I hate games of chess.
That's because you hate losing.
Leo, why won't you open your mind? Chess is a game of tactics and planning. Think of the board as a battlefield without bloodshed.
Okay. We'll play some more, only please don't go intellectual on me, huh?
Your move.
The man wearing a suit now wears a three-quarter-length dark grey raincoat. Carrying his brown suitcase, he walks up to the front door of the residential home, and quick, and he appears to shuffle up the steps. He looks up at the high, imposing front of the building and opens the door. In an office on the first floor, the officious art critic stares out of a window as rain teems down the pane. There are two large desks in the office. The one behind which he is standing is empty, but the second desk is strewn with papers, and a young man sits behind it reading a newspaper.
Mr. Dobbs is here, Doctor.
Excellent. Send him in, please. Welcome to Lakeview, Mr. Dobbs. I'm Dr. Willows. Everyone here calls me Richard. This is my mother, Agnes.
Mrs. Willows.
I was expecting you an hour ago.
I stopped for lunch. I always have my lunch at 1 o'clock.
Excuse me, I'm kind of confused. You are Gideon Dobbs.
Yes, I am.
You do know this is a retirement home. Why would a young person like yourself even want to live here?
My Aunt Edna told me to come. Do you know Aunt Edna?
We met when she made the arrangements. Do you know why she wanted you to come here?
She said she couldn't take care of me anymore. She said she didn't want to send me far away. She said I'd be better off here. That's what Aunt Edna said.
Mr. Dobbs, you just can't stay here. I'm sure you understand our position. Good afternoon.
Mrs. Willows sits stuffily and with an air of finality at her desk. Richard smiles nervously at Gideon and starts shuffling papers.
Is there something else?
Where will I go?
Well, can't you stay with your Aunt Edna?
Her new husband, Howard, says I make his ass hurt.
Excuse me?
He says he has a big pain in his ass whenever I'm around.
Look, I don't know what to tell you about that, Mr. Dobbs. I just know you cannot stay here.
Howard is an attorney, and he told me to tell you that if you do not allow me to stay based solely on my age, it's an act of reverse discrimination. You signed a legally binding contract and accepted monies in advance. If you do not provide the services you previously agreed to, then legal action will be taken against you.
Look, Mr. Dobbs, I'd like to know exactly where you stand.
I'm on the other side of the table from you.
I see. You came here prepared to arbitrate this matter.
I don't know.
Perhaps we can reach a compromise that would be beneficial to both of us.
What does that mean?
Well, that means that I can see how, after paying money and reaching an agreement, that you would feel entitled to services contracted. Well, why don't you stay here? On a trial basis, of course. We'll see how it works for you and the other residents. Does that sound fair?
Yes. Very fair, Richard.
He leads Gideon into the corridor and sees a nurse with one of the residents.
Oh, Gene, good. You're here. Gene, this is Mr. Dobbs. He's going to be staying with us.
Oh, welcome, Mr. Dobbs.
She stares at Gideon.
Gene is in charge of the counseling and the activities here.
Hello.
Hello.
Perhaps you could give Mr. Dobbs the tour of the facility.
She nods uncertainly.
Okay, come this way.
Gideon shuffles quickly to her shoulder and follows as she looks quizzically back at Richard.
This is the dining room. Breakfast is served from 8 until 9. Lunch is at 1.
Oh, I always have my lunch at 1.
Good. Dinner is served at 6, and there's no eating in the rooms unless you're ill.
Yes.
This is your room. Actually, it's one of the better ones.
This is mine. I have a bed, and a nightstand, and a dresser, and a chair. This is just fine, Dean.
He steps very close to her.
I think you'll find that Lakeview has a lot to offer.
Yes, Jean, I think so, too.
My philosophy is the world you create is the world you live in.
He looks at her blankly and then smiles and nods.
Well, I'm going to let you get settled in, unless you have any questions.
Yes, Jean.
Yes.
What does beneficial mean?
It means something that is good for you, something that benefits you.
Thank you.
She smiles, nodding.
Okay.
As she leaves, he turns and looks anxiously around the sparse room. In the main room, an old man suddenly wakes at the sound of the telephone.
Is it for me?
No. Hey, I didn't order none of that. Okay. All right. Bye.
What time is it?
About 5 minutes later than it was the last time you asked me.
Come on, it's got to be later than that.
Do you have to talk so loud?
I ain't talking loud, Mom. It's just you. Your ears are funny.
We're trying to watch the news. Some of us are still interested in what's going on in the world.
Oh, sorry. Get her.
Let her watch the news. It's important to her.
It's important to her? She thinks that the president is still Richard Nixon.
My dear Leo, because her reality is not shared by you does not make it any less valid.
Don't be giving me that egghead stuff, huh?
Look, Leo, if you want to talk, man, why don't you just slide on over to the other side of the room there?
Oh, yeah, I can do that. Slide over to the other side of the room. Hey, everybody, I'm just going to slide on over to the other side of the room. Catch this slide.
Leo mimes as if skiing into the other room.
Third round, and I faked him my right, and pow, I hit him with a left hook. Yeah, you know what happened?
Yeah, the alarm clock went off and you woke up.
That's cute. It's real funny, Leo.
What happened next?
I don't feel like talking about it now. You know what's for dinner tonight?
It's Monday, Harlan. We're having chicken. We always have chicken on Monday.
I was wishing it was Tuesday. I feel like meatloaf. Are you sure it's not Tuesday?
No.
Monday, Tuesday. Chicken, meatloaf. What's the difference? It all tastes like crap.
Well, I still wish it was Tuesday.
Wearing his dark suit, but with his blue shirt buttoned to the collar, not wearing a tie, walks over to them, watching them nervously.
My name is Gideon.
Hello, Gideon. I'm Ellie. And this is Harlan. And that's Addison and Leo.
How you doing?
Who are you visiting?
No one.
You ain't visiting no one. Then what the hell are you doing here?
I have a room upstairs.
A room? Aren't you a little young to be living here?
I don't know. What do you think?
Well, your appearance certainly indicates you're too young. Therefore, taking that into account, I must assume there are other factors besides your chronological state.
Jeez, what an egghead.
In short, I'm sure you have your own reasons for coming here, and it would be ill-mannered of me or anyone else to pry.
Is it just me, or does everybody around here seem a little weird today?
It's the rain, Leo.
It's going to stop very soon.
Oh, but the weather report said it was going to rain for days.
No. It will stop soon.
Hey, smarty pants, all the experts, they say it's going to rain for days and days. You know? These are professional people. They all went to college. So how do you know it's going to stop?
I don't know. I just know. I'm going to wash my hands for dinner. Bye-bye.
They watch him leave, and Harlan shrugs at Leo. Addison, standing holding his book, watches Gideon thoughtfully, and Leo rests his head on one hand in mock dismay. Suddenly, his expression changes. As sunlight bursts through the window behind him and the pane of glass clears of teeming water, he looks out in shock. Ellie and Harlan lean forward in surprise, and she raises her hand, smiling.
It's a fluke.
The residents gather in the dinner hall. Richard and his mother sit at the top table. Over his soup, Richard looks over at Jean, who looks shyly back at him and smiles. A broad, happy grin spreads over his face, but it disappears the moment he looks at his mother's sour-faced expression.
Oh,
Addison pulls out a chair for Ellie as the group sits down.
Thank you.
As Addison takes his seat again, Gideon enters and shuffles nervously over to their table. He beams at them.
Leo, good to see you again.
You just left 10 minutes ago.
Sarah, this is Gideon.
Sarah gestures almost secretively for Gideon to sit at the empty chair beside her. A look of tenderness passes between the group as they watch her.
Do you know what time my program is?
Gideon looks at her anxiously and turns to his soup.
Jeopardy is on at 7 o'clock, dear.
What time is it now?
Oh, it's only 6.
I don't want to miss my program.
This soup is bilge water. I mean, that's what they give us to eat around here, stuff from bilges.
I don't think it's that bad.
Ah, what do you know about food?
I know what I like.
They could strap a feed bag on you. You'd never know the difference. I'm talking about food, real food, good food.
Oh, put a plug in it, Leo.
Let me tell you something. There's more to life than cheese puffs and sloppy joes. What the hell's he talking to you? You got the palate of a Neanderthal.
He can't hear you, Leo. He's taken out his hearing aid.
You're a Neanderthal.
Tell me, Gideon, did you truly know it was raining back then?
Yes, Addison, I truly did.
Excuse me, I'd like to take this opportunity to introduce our newest resident, Mr. Gideon Dobbs. Gideon, could you stand up, please?
Gideon shoves a spoonful into his mouth and stands up, taking another spoonful as he does so.
I know what you all are thinking. Mr. Dobbs is a bit young to be a guest here, but I think his presence could be beneficial.
Beneficial. That means anything that's good for you.
Yeah, sit down.
So let's give Mitch a big Lakeview welcome.
What did he say?
He said you're in the Neanderthal. Oh,
Leo, what one of these days, Leo?
There's a yellow rose in Texas that I am going to see. No other feller loves her. Nobody, only me. She cried so when
Coleman
I
walked
her. It like to
Hi, Coleman
heart.
Walker. I'm Gideon. Big G. Big G, baby. Well, I'm the fix-it man around here. If you need something fixed, just holler, but don't holler too loud. I think these folks tear up this stuff around here just like fixed. They can't keep nothing fixed.
I'm really stuffed.
I can't see how you can fill yourself up with all of that crap. The cook stinks. And so, therefore, the food stinks.
You may not realize it, my friend, but you just made a syllogism.
I did what?
Made a syllogism. A form of reasoning in which two separate subjects are tied together so as to become a logical conclusion.
Addison was a professor of philosophy at the university for 22 years.
Philosophy? I know that.
Really?
Yes, really.
Perhaps one evening we could discuss Plato's simile of the lion.
I don't understand that.
Well, of course not. Who does? But we could talk about it theoretically.
Oh, yes. I'd like to talk to you, Addison.
Well, it would seem I have finally found someone with whom I can probe the depths of ontology, epistemology, aesthetics, and ethics.
Oh, you and him are great.
I promise you, when we have our usual discussions of bowel movements, enemas, and suppositories, I will pursue it with full vigor.
Hey, listen, you want to go up and talk to him about things? I don't care. Personally, I think all that philosophy crap don't mean a thing to the average man.
Well, of course it does. Every man has a philosophy, a view through which he lives. What's your philosophy, Gideon?
My philosophy.
Yes.
My philosophy is the world we create is the world we live in.
Well put, my boy. Very well put.
Gideon's face breaks into a huge smile and he shuffles excitedly on the spot. At bedtime, Sarah, dressed in a pink cotton nightie, sits on the edge of her bed holding a black and white silver-framed photograph. It shows a young couple in tuxedo and cocktail dress. Her finger lingers on the man's face and she holds the picture to her breast before lying down and pulling the covers up. With the picture lying beside her, she reaches to the bedside lamp and switches it off. In his room, Harlan shadow boxes, dressed in a silken boxer's robe, with a firearms high in the air. The look of triumphant joy drains from his face as he remembers where he is, and a wave of futility washes over him. Leo sits on the edge of his bed, flicking through pages in a thick, hard-backed volume. He picks up the book, peering at it intently before laying it on his lap and taking his glasses from his pajama top pocket. Picking up the book again, he smiles sadly to himself as he realizes it is upside down. Turning it over, he lays it on his lap once more and takes a pad of paper and a pen and starts to make notes. Addison shuffles papers on his desk, searching for something. Uncovering a thick book, he reads the spine and nods to himself. Slowly, he crosses to an armchair beside a standard lamp and opens the book. Ellie watches an old black and white movie, overcome with emotion. Mrs. Willows sits at her dressing table. A tray of cosmetics lies in front of a large round mirror into which she peers. She pushes the skin of her cheeks backwards and lifts her eyebrows. With a feathering touch, she taps her cheeks sadly and picks up a hairbrush and brushes her silver-grey hair. Sorrow sweeps over her and she looks sadly at her reflection. Gideon sits on the end of his bed. In one hand, he holds a small piece of wood. His concentration is focused on the sharp knife in his right hand as he carefully carves. A sadness stops him suddenly, and his expression darkens momentarily, before a relaxed, happy smile spreads over his lips and he continues whittling. The next day, the residents are called to their regular meeting. The senior staff sit at a table in front of rows of chairs under the morose gaze of their patients.
All right, let's start the meeting. Any new business?
Yes, I got some new business here.
Mr. Barnes.
I can't understand, with all the money we pay this year, why you can't go out and buy some high-quality, double-ply toilet paper. Because I want to tell you, the cheap stuff you're putting on the rolls here is playing hell with my hemorrhoids.
Mr. Barnes, we will discuss your hemorrhoids at the next meeting.
Yeah, but I'm in pain now.
It's an administrative matter. We'll discuss it at the next meeting.
I think we can discuss it now.
No, it's administration. You and I will discuss it later.
It ain't the administrators that's in pain. It's most of the residents.
I must agree with Leo.
Mr. Sinclair, will you please sit down? I'm talking to Mr. Barnes.
Why? Why can't he speak? I ain't the only one around here who goes to the crapper.
One person at a time speaks.
I'll bet you have two-ply paper in your room.
Ellie, sit down.
Don't speak to me like a child.
Yes, what is it?
Do you know what time my program's on?
How come we don't have cable TV?
Well, why can't we have Tuesdays twice a week?
Will you stop with that meatloaf Saturday? We're talking about important business here.
Quiet. Quiet, all of you. We'll continue this meeting next week when emotions have calmed down.
Mrs. Willow storms out of the room and Richard looks nervously at Jean.
She seemed very angry, Leo.
No kidding.
No, I'm not kidding. She seemed very angry.
Well, balancing your expenditures against your current revenues, the deficit number.
Please, plain English.
You're in deep financial trouble.
It's bad, eh?
Bad. Richard, there's so much red ink here, the books are bleeding.
I told you, you should have stayed in private practice.
What options do we have?
Options. Thought about selling?
I don't think so.
What do you mean you don't think so? Since when do you make such decisions alone?
Just don't know who's going to want to buy a retirement home.
You're right, Richard. No one would. But this land would make a great resort site.
A resort site?
This place is going under, and if you don't get out, you'll be sucked down with it.
What will we do if this place goes down?
I don't know.
Look, I know you both had a vision here. You shaped a dream out of nothing and made it something, but now you have to think practically. Take emotion out of the mix. It's business. I know how much you care about these people.
The hell with them. Sell the damn dump.
Is it for me?
Hello?
Is it for me?
No.
Manners, Mr. Greer. Manners.
Manners, Mr. Greer. One of these days, I'm going to give her a piece of my mind.
I heard that. Is there something you want to say to me?
No.
Oh, Jesus.
And what about you, Mr. Barnes? Is there something you want to say?
Oh, no, no, nothing at all, nice ratchet.
She walks past the old man sitting by the phone.
Now, don't you start with...
Richard and Jean walk to separate opposite ends of the main reception desk and meet each other's eyes nervously over the black countertop.
Ms. Flores is still complaining about her shoulder.
How much medication are we giving her now?
5 milligrams.
Well, let's increase that to 10. Oh, I may not be here tonight. I was thinking about going into town and catching that new movie.
Well, have fun.
Yeah. You know, it's nice to get out sometimes.
Have a good time.
Jean, I was thinking that maybe, I was thinking that you're doing a really good job.
Her expectant
here.
Face clouds.
Thank you.
Richard looks sheepishly around, annoyed with himself. Outside on the patio, Addison sits at a table wearing a hat and coat against the cold, engrossed in a book. Gideon walks out and looks around. Seeing Addison, he smiles happily and shuffles on the spot with excitement.
Hello, Addison.
Hello. Sit down.
Everyone's inside.
I know. They're hiding.
From who?
From life. Sometimes I wonder if they really know they're still alive. Day after day, the same routine. Over and over, pondering their mortality. Take Leo, for example. He was a brilliant chef, owned his own restaurant. Now he spends his time playing gin and complaining about the food. People should grow.
Yes, I have grown. I was once much smaller than I am now.
Yes, and now you've changed from a boy to a man. Do you know why? Because it was in your nature to do so.
You mean like a butterfly?
Exactly. Leo's changed into an old man. He's afraid to come out of his cocoon.
But if he did, he could fly.
Yes, indeed he could.
Addison puts his hand on Gideon's knee and Gideon stares at the hand before gently patting it. Inside, Ellie looks up as a man enters.
Hello, Mr. Taylor. Are you all set for tomorrow?
Well, that's what I've come to talk to you about.
I know. I told you could have my room after I left, but it appears I'm staying after all.
What happened?
My son decided not to move. There's not enough room in the apartment, not with the kids and all.
I'm sorry to hear that.
I wasn't quite sure I wanted to go.
Ellie gets up from the sofa and takes Mr. Taylor's hand, looking deep into his sad eyes.
We would have missed you if you'd left.
Outside, in a small flower bed, Addison, wearing an hat, sits on a stool cutting dead rosebuds from tired old rose bushes. Gideon watches him intently, wincing at every cut.
Gideon, your interests wouldn't happen to include gardening?
No, Addison.
But you do like roses.
Oh, yes, I like roses.
It is the most beautiful flower. It's inspired poets throughout the ages.
Red bows, proud bows, sad bows of all my days. Come near me while I sing the ancient ways.
You know Yeats?
I don't think so. What room is he in?
You have a modest humor, Gideon. So many men today are filled with their own self-importance. They wear their success for the world to see. I've always believed one should move through life accumulating silent victories. I believe you're such a man, Gideon. You walk the quiet road.
I know that road, Addison. It led me here.
Two roads converged in a wood, and I chose the one less traveled by.
And that has made all the difference, Robert Frost.
Addison stares at him in amazement, and slowly a smile spreads across Gideon's face. Gideon is alone in the rose garden.
Hello, little flower. You're gonna be beautiful when you grow. Good morning, Jean.
Good morning. How's everything coming along?
Addison gave me a rose bush to take care of. He said it's good to talk to the flowers.
Hmm. Well, I guess that's all right. Until they start talking back.
Oh, but they do. If you know how to listen to them.
Listen, Gideon, I noticed there's a page missing from your medical file. Do you know where that is?
No, I don't.
Do you know what was on it?
No.
Hey, Mom.
Molly, what are you doing home from school, honey?
Miss Chandler got sick, so they sent us home. Hi.
Gideon, this is my daughter, Molly.
Hi, Molly.
What am I gonna do with you? Well, I guess you'll spend the afternoon in my office with me.
I don't wanna be in your office all day.
Well, you can't be out here by yourself, baby.
Mom.
I'll take care of her.
Come with me.
That's a very strange young man running around out there.
Yeah, well, it reminds me of when I used to do road work.
He's very agile, isn't he?
Oh, come on, don't tell me I'm the only one around here who thinks he's screwy. Listen, who is he? Where does he come from? What does he want here? These are questions you should be asking yourself.
Why is that?
Why?
Because you should get to know a lot about a person before you get too friendly with him.
Leo, I am not dating him.
You just don't want to admit to me that the guy is screwed.
Well, I'm willing to admit he has a peculiar quality, but I find it refreshing.
You don't see nothing wrong with a grown man running around out there like a jerk?
Absolutely not. Were I in better condition, I would join them.
Me too. I was a wonderful swimmer when I was young. I used to love swimming.
Addison, Leo, and Harlan watch Sarah with amusement, and as one turn back to the window to watch Gideon.
Ooh, nice threads there, Big G. Boy, you looking kind of large.
I am?
Hey, is he clean, y'all? Man, you are cleaner than a doctor's cot, baby. You go ahead.
Thank you, Coleman Walker. Jean gave me these clothes.
Jean give you them clothes?
Yes. And a whole box more.
Hey, look at this. He's here only 10 days, he gets a whole new wardrobe. I'm here 2 years, I can't even get a fresh roll of toilet paper.
Did you hear about Mr. Taylor?
In the cold, bright light of morning, two paramedics wheel a trolley down a sloping road which has been laid over a body. The doors to the ambulance have been left open and slowly the paramedics lift the trolley inside. On the porch in front of the home, a crowd of residents has gathered to watch. Gideon stands with his hands by his side, staring at the ambulance at the front of the lawn. His brow is furrowed with sad contemplation. Beside him, Addison watches, his teeth are clenched, making his bearded jaw jut forward in dignified sorrow. Harlan looks on with an expression of sad disbelief, and next to him, Leo's face is a mask of sad inevitability. Tears roll down Ellie's cheeks, and she is neither able nor willing to stop them. Unable to look any longer, Ellie turns and the others slowly follow her back inside, filing into the main room, sharing each other's sorrow. Gideon does not move. He simply stands and stares across the lawn. That night, Addison is reading in his bedroom, but is unable to concentrate on his book. He looks towards the bedroom door and struggles with indecision. He gets up and opens the door. Slowly, almost jauntily, his slippers silent on the vinyl floor, he crosses the corridor. Checking to make sure that no one has seen him, he makes his way towards Ellie's room. Standing outside, he raises his hand to knock, but stops himself. Ellie is reading in bed, unaware of what is happening outside her door. Addison raises his hand again, but cannot knock, and drops his arm in disgust at his own cowardice. Sitting in bed, Ellie hears Addison's footsteps as he plods dejectedly back to his room. She stops reading and lays the book flat against her chest, listening, a sad smile whispering at the corners of her mouth. In the morning, Leo waits for Gideon.
Here he is, everybody's new best friend.
Now, why are you always so hard on him, Leo?
Because?
What?
Because. Why am I discussing this with the handyman?
Because most of the people in this neighborhood, they don't even want to talk to you.
Well, you're talking to me.
Yeah, well, I ain't really that particular. Besides, I get paid to talk to y'all.
Well, I ain't asking you to.
Leo, you a cranky old dog, you know that?
Cranky old dog, huh? Coleman, you may be absolutely right about that. Hey, how you doing, Gideon?
Fine.
Nice to see you. Hey, Holly and I, we were just about to take a walk.
We were?
Yeah, get up.
Well, where?
Don't ask questions. Come on.
Gideon, come here over here to the gate here. Hey? Listen, I need a minute. I got to talk to Harlan about something. So you just go ahead. You take that path right down there, huh? Go ahead.
Okay, Leo.
Leo opens the gate for Gideon and closes it behind the dog sign.
Leo, I don't know about this, Leo.
Come on. We're just having a little fun here. I just want to see how fast he could run.
He might get hurt.
What do you think? I'm going to let him get hurt?
Gideon! Gideon! Come back here, Gideon! Run!
Jeez, I think he's too dumb to run.
Gideon stands absolutely still as the Doberman guard dog charges towards him. The dog stops and Gideon stares down at it, his eyes fixed on those of the dog. Gideon smiles contentedly and leans his head slowly to the right. The dog mirrors his movement. Gideon leans to the left and again the dog follows him. As Gideon stands up straight staring at the dog, it sits and he gently pats its head, but firmly enough to push it down to lie on the floor, and he crouches beside it rubbing its belly. Leo opens the gate in astonishment and steps forward.
All these years of savagery and our dog ain't nothing but hot air.
Hey!
Hold still. Don't be a baby.
What in the world possessed you to go down at Coleman's anyways? You know that dog's a killer.
Don't be asking them questions. Keep your mind on what you're doing there. Hey, shouldn't I be getting a shot or something? How do you guys know that the dog didn't have rabies?
Hell, Leo, the dog will probably catch something from biting you.
Oh, Holland, how funny. How truly funny.
In his yard as Gideon approaches.
Hello, Coleman Walker.
What in the hell is you doing? You trying to scare me to death?
No, I'm not trying to do that.
Gideon, if you don't get away from around here, I got a dog eat your behind up. Now, Homer, come here. Come here, boy. Come here. I'll be damned. I've never seen him take to anybody like that but me.
He's a good dog. I just came to tell him that I know he didn't mean to bite Leo in the butt.
Wait a minute. Homer bit Leo in the butt?
Yeah, in the butt. Right here.
Good boy.
You're not angry?
Angry with Homer? Hell no. That old man's been a pain in the ass ever since the day I met him.
My Aunt Edna's husband has a pain in his ass, too.
Gideon? I ain't got a lot of work to do around here. Okay.
I know how to chop wood.
Yeah? You offering to help?
Yes, I'm offering to help.
Colin takes off his gloves. He offers the gloves to Gideon, who refuses them with a look of mild surprise. He steps forward and lines up the axe blade. With one swift chop, he hits directly in the center of a log and raises it above his head. Bringing it heavily down on a tree stump, he splits it in two. Coleman looks at him with surprised amusement and leaves him to it.
Gideon!
Gideon looks at him and then at a pile of unchopped logs. Uncertain, jams the axe blade into the tree stump he had been using as a chopping base and walks over to where Coleman sits, sipping a beer. Gideon sits down on a wire-framed chair next to him.
Hey, when you get back, tell Leo that I'm sorry Homer bit his ass.
I will. Has Leo always been mean?
Leo was born mean.
I don't think he wants to be mean. I think he's sad.
Yeah, I think most of the people here are sad in one way or another. Their lives are closer to the end than the beginning. They've forgotten how to do for themselves, how to stand up for themselves.
Do you stand up for yourself, Coleman Walker?
Yeah, I do now. I didn't always. When I was growing up, I had a job as a hired hand on a farm. And the owner was about the hardest living soul I'd ever met. Even then, I knew that deep inside, he was just a little man. And the only way he could make himself feel big was to make others feel small. And one day, my little brother, who was working with me, was carrying a bucket of milk from the barn to the main house. And he tripped. And the owner walked up to him and started screaming. He drew his hand back. Something inside me snapped. I grabbed his wrist. I said, "Don't you touch
it." Slowly, the handyman lets go of his wrist.
And it was in that moment I realized two things. One, I just quit my job. And two, I'd stood up for myself. For the first time in my life.
That's a nice story, Coleman Walker.
Yeah. Yes, it is, isn't it?
Leo plonks a pillow ball and his friends smirk at his discomfort. He pushes his food away in disgust.
Aren't you hungry, Leo?
Don't talk to me.
Well, aren't we grumpy this evening?
Well, you try getting a bite in your ass and see how you feel.
Leo.
Now, look at this. Look at this. It's rubber. It's old rubber. I wouldn't feed that to a pig.
Do you think we could have one night when you don't complain about the food?
No.
You know, Leo, if you don't like the food, then you used to be a chef. Why don't you cook for us one night?
Didn't I tell you not to talk to me?
Hey, I think Gideon's got a great idea there.
Ah, what are you talking about?
Oh, come on.
Yeah, we could go into town tomorrow and buy some food and you could cook it.
I get the concept.
Oh, what do you say, about noon? Be all right?
I ain't gonna go.
I'll drive.
Listen, I don't want to cook for you guys. That's it. That's it.
He turns angrily away and Harlan spears Leo's chicken with his fork, lifting it onto his own plate.
It's good.
Leo stares at them in... The following day, Harlan drives Addison and Gideon into town in his blue convertible Chevrolet, and they stop at a butcher's shop.
Make sure he trims the fat.
But let me handle this, okay?
You call those lamb chops? I've seen rats with more meat on them than that.
Hey, guys, I don't make them. I just sell them.
Harlan, why don't you and Gideon go see if you can find a few rolls of 2-ply toilet paper for Leo?
Okay. Make sure he trims the fat. Go.
Please trim the fat.
Hope Leo likes lamb chops.
I don't doubt it.
Doing today. I'll be right back.
Fine, thank you, miss.
The door to the diner opens and a tough-looking thug wearing a bandana on his head enters with a young woman.
Boy, if he starts anything today, I want to knock his block off.
Okay.
Morning.
The scruffy thug looks away from the counter and stares at Harlan and Addison sitting with Gideon. He swaggers menacingly over to them.
Over in the old fossil club.
That is a redundant statement.
Huh?
Anything that is fossilized is by definition old. Therefore, to call us
shut up.
Old fossil.
He looks like a pirate.
If you ask me, he looks like an idiot.
He goes back to his companion, who looks over at the old man and giggles. He turns around to see why, and his expression suddenly changes. Addison, Harlan, and Gideon have wrapped toilet tissue around their heads, parodying his bandana. They smile at him and give him a thumbs-up sign, smirking to each other. He immediately stands up and crosses to them. Standing beside them, he points at their heads.
Think this is funny?
I think it's time to go. Billy Ray, could I have my car keys, please?
Who are you?
My name is Gideon. I live with them at the home. My Aunt Edna sent me
away. Who gives a shit?
Could I please have those
cars?
No,
you can't.
We gotta go.
I tell you what, Harlan, old boy. If you start clucking like a chicken, I'll give you your keys back. Come on.
Tell me, can't you go find some small animals to torture?
I'm waiting.
You better stop that. You're making Harlan mad.
What's Harlan gonna do?
He said he's gonna knock your block off.
He did?
Yeah, he did.
Did you say that, Harlan? Did you say you're gonna knock my block off? Oh, that's right, I forgot. You're the big bad boxer, right? Well, come on, show me what you got. Let's go a few rounds. Come on, boom, boom, boom. Come on. You ain't nothing. You never were. And just a tired old man who's told his lies so many times, he believes them.
All right, that's enough. Give him back his car keys, you appalling little sociopath.
What'd you call me?
A sociopath.
Sit down, Gramp.
Don't you touch him.
I was just kidding. No harm done, mister.
Billy Ray tosses the keys onto the table and walks quickly away as Gideon turns and smiles. He sits back down, beaming at Harlan and Addison. Having finished their coffees, they get back into the car. With the wind in their hair, they drive along a long, wide-laned highway.
I think you gave that young hooligan quite a lesson, Gideon, didn't he, Harlan? I'll never forget the look in his eyes when you grabbed his wrist.
Yes, he looked very frightened.
Frightened doesn't describe it. He was petrified.
Harlan takes off his hearing aid.
I feel good. I feel young. Gideon, I can't remember when I've had a more memorable...
Gideon has collapsed on the back seat. He taps Harlan, who looks over as a thin trickle of blood runs from Gideon's nose. Back in the retirement home, Gideon sits up in bed, still clothed, while Richard listens to his heartbeat through a stethoscope and checks his pulse. He picks up a medical chart and starts writing.
Gideon, I'd like you to rest in bed for the day.
I feel fine, Richard.
Rest. Richard walks out, and Gideon immediately swings his legs onto the floor and gets up as Richard walks back in.
Rest?
Gideon sits and leans sideways against the pillow like a child who knows the person telling him off is not really angry. He waits for a moment and sits up straight. Leaning forward, but without getting off the bed, he peers round the wall at the door, checking that Richard has really gone. Satisfied, Gideon picks up his cardigan from the bedstead and collects some things from his bedside table. He stands and shuffles quickly out of the door. Harlan sits in his room on the edge of his bed, clutching a leather boxing glove and staring sadly into space.
Hey, Harlan, what are you doing, huh?
I'm kind of busy right now.
Oh, you're busy, huh? Yeah, gee, you sure look busy. Addison told me about what happened.
That's great. Go on, make your few jokes about what a chicken I was today, and then you can get out.
There wasn't no shame in what happened.
Leo, I just sat there. I didn't do anything. 30 years ago, I would have snapped that punk kid in half like an old twig. Today, I was just an old man afraid of getting hurt.
All right. Now, that's enough. You don't have to prove nothing to your friends.
Leo, I'm so tired of being scared. I'm tired of saying yes when I mean no. I just ain't gonna do it anymore.
Will you come on? Hey, you're too old to start acting like a kid.
Yeah. But I'm not too old to act like a man.
The grounds of Lakeview residential home stretch into the hills behind the house. Amid the trees and bushes, a peaceful calm envelops everything. Gideon sits on a bench facing towards the trees, head down in concentration as he whittles at a piece of wood. He looks up as he utters the foliage. Behind him, walking alone, Jean watches in silent awe as the stag walks straight up to Gideon and nuzzles gently under his chin. Slowly, Gideon strokes its strong, slender neck, and it shies away, only to come quickly back. Suddenly worried, Jean walks quickly forward, but stops once more as the animal gently brushes its nose against Gideon's face and turns away, walking quickly back into the trees.
Hello, Jean.
He shrugs and smiles, but keeps whittling while Jean stands nervously in front of him, one hand on her hip, the other anxiously playing with her hair.
Well, I just came to check on you. I heard about what happened in the car.
I'm fine, Jean.
Does this have anything to do with the missing page in your medical file? Gideon, what was on the page?
Something the doctor wrote.
Gideon, I need to talk to you about this.
Dinner is almost ready. I can't be late.
Gideon?
Okay, you don't have to push and shove me and pull me in here. I've been down here before. I've seen it all, so what?
We just wanted you to have a look at it.
Yeah, well, I see them. They're beautiful lamb chops here. Let's go.
How are you going to cook them?
I was thinking about boiling them.
What? You're going to boil them prime lamb chops there? You must be nuts. You can't do that.
Leo, how would you cook them?
You got to broil them very carefully.
With the seasoning?
Just, of course, with seasoning. You know, tarragon, a little rosemary, stuff like that there. Boil them. Get out of the way. Let me see what
you... I want to boil them.
Oh, I'm going to boil your head. Oh, hey, wait a minute. Where are you going with the asparagus? You steam asparagus. As soon as the steam is ready, you
are
put it in.
Are you sure the Willows know about this?
I'm telling you, it's all right.
We have created a monster.
So soon. You like it, huh, Harlan? Addison. Yeah, Gideon. Great. Eat up.
Richard walks into the dinner hall.
Evening, Jean.
Hello.
Wow. What is this? Who prepared this meal?
I did.
Really? And who authorized it?
Leo points at Jean, who looks round at him from the top table and stands to face Mrs. Willows.
I did.
I'll discuss this with you later.
Yes, ma'am.
All right, everyone stop eating. We're not children. We can make up our own minds about how we live and what we eat. Ellie, we have meat here once a week. That's all.
Why? Why is that all?
Because meat is not good for you. You're all too old to digest it properly.
If God didn't want us to eat animals, why'd you make them out of meat?
Harlan, don't help me.
Well, I'm eating mine.
All right, Harlan Greer, you give me your plate this instant.
As everyone stops, the staff at the top table turn to watch. Harlan puts down his cutlery and stands up slowly.
For years now, you've been telling me what to eat. Tonight, I got a couple of lamb chops on my plate, and not you or anybody else is going to take them away from me.
All right, fine. But don't come crying to me when you're laying in bed with acid indigestion.
After the meal, Ellie walks outside to sit at a table in a sunken patio. She passes Addison sitting at another table, who almost speaks but stops himself, and she continues down the steps.
Gideon, have you ever been in love?
I don't think so, Addison. Have you?
Oh, yes. Her name was Sally. We used to sit long, lazy afternoons in her front porch, talking until the sun went down.
What happened to her?
She married another. After a time, I lost track of her.
You loved her very much, didn't you, Addison?
Yes, I did.
Like Ellie?
No, no. What I feel for Ellie is fondness, admiration.
No, it's love. I can see it when you look at her.
Well, what if it is? I see no reason to talk about it. Love is for young people.
No, love is for everyone, Addison.
I am an old man. Why start something that could only last a few years? Besides, I wouldn't know what to say to her. Although I have intimated several times a certain affection for her.
Sometimes I don't understand you, Addison. I think you use big words so you don't say what your feelings are.
That is the most preposterous allegation I have ever heard. To suggest that my loquacious nature is in any way contrived, planned. I am a big bag of hot air, am I not? I suppose you think I should tell her, just come out and tell her. You're right, I should, but timing is very important in these matters. Perhaps I should wait until... I know there is no time like the present. If not now, when?
They both stand up. Addison, nervous but determined. Gideon, simply happy. They look at each other for a moment, and as Addison is about to say something, Gideon walks away, smiling. Addison walks around his table and down the steps to the lower level of the patio where Ellie sits alone. She looks up and smiles.
Good evening. It's a beautiful night, isn't it?
Yes, yes. It's very pleasant.
Yes. Ellie, there's something I would like to talk to you about. Well, it's just that I find you to be a very congenial person, one I enjoy conversing with. And I very much value our friendship.
Well, thank you, Addison.
Well, good night.
Addison quickly walks away, leaving Ellie alone at the table. She smiles, but there is sadness in her eyes. In the morning, Gideon sits in the main room with the others, whittling. He looks over towards two men playing chess.
You know, I've been thinking about adding some other activities. what do you think about another arts and crafts class? Not good, huh?
I'd just like to do something a little different.
Okay, I'm open to suggestions.
I could teach boxing.
All right.
Harlan, something realistic.
Something exciting.
Boxing's exciting.
Hey, I could teach a cooking class.
I'd rather watch grass grow.
I just want to do something we can all be involved in.
I want to play.
That is a brilliant idea. A play. We could do a play.
What could we do?
Oh, something romantic.
We could do Romeo and Juliet.
Ah.
Gideon could be Romeo.
Gideon sits down at the chessboard.
Who would be Juliet?
Jean and the others follow suit.
No. No.
Ellie smiles and nods while the others just stare.
No, I'm not an actress. You're always telling us to try new things. I get the feeling that I am going to regret this.
Later, Jean runs up the steps outside to the rose garden where Gideon tends his bush.
Oh, Romeo, Romeo, wherefore art thou, Romeo?
Gideon looks around to see who she's talking to. Seeing no one, he goes back to his plant.
I'm going into Watsonville to pick up some copies of the play. This isn't going to be easy, Gideon. Making a play is quite an undertaking.
Is it?
Oh, yeah. We did this in high school. I didn't play Juliet. Played the nurse. Kathy Millstrom got to play Juliet because she was the prettiest girl in high school.
Prettier than you?
Oh, yeah.
But you're very pretty, Jean.
Well, you're very sweet, Gideon.
She kisses him on the cheek just as Richard enters the garden. He watches as Jean walks away and Gideon practices pouting. Richard waits anxiously until Jean has gone and steps forward, taking off his hat. He stares at Gideon with indignant jealousy.
What's going on, Gideon?
I'm working on my rose bush.
Oh, I think you know what I mean. Are you making a play for Jean?
Yes, I am, Richard.
I see.
Maybe I could make one for you, too.
What?
How about if you, Jean, and me did it together? That would be fun. I'm sure the others would like to see that.
Smiling nervously, Richard runs away down the steps. Inside, Harlan speaks from behind a large mask.
A rose by any other name would smell as sweet.
Well, Harlan, I didn't know that you knew Shakespeare.
Addison helped me.
Ellie, have you seen Sarah?
No.
Has anyone else?
Is something wrong?
Well, she missed her appointment with Dr. Willows this morning.
Have you looked in her room?
I've looked everywhere. I'm afraid she may have wandered off and gotten lost in the woods.
I propose we form teams of two and search in all directions.
Sarah! Sarah!
Sarah! Sarah! Sarah!
As night falls, they continue searching. Gideon walks over a ridge in the woods and down onto a path. Looking down, he suddenly sees Sarah sitting below in a hollow.
What is it doing? I don't know what they are.
Gideon steps forward but stops on hearing Addison. He turns to walk towards him.
I'm beginning to be very worried.
Maybe we should look somewhere else. You go this way, and I'll go that way.
All right.
Sending Addison towards Sarah, Gideon heads up the ridge.
Sarah!
Addison suddenly sees her.
Sarah! Wait right there. Wait there. Gideon!
I found her!
Everyone waits outside the home, comforting each other.
Look!
Ellie suddenly spies Addison, Sarah, and Gideon as they emerge from the trees. Harlan steps forward to help while Jean struggles to control herself. Richard helps his mother up from her chair as Addison walks Sarah, tears streaming down her face towards Ellie.
Is she all right?
She appears to be.
Ellie. Mm.
Ellie wipes Sarah as Jean puts an arm around her shoulders. Sarah is shepherded inside. Addison, unsure of what to do, follows behind but stops on the steps. Ellie turns back to him.
Thank you.
She kisses him gently on the cheek and walks back inside. He holds out his hand to stop her but thinks better of it and follows falteringly behind. Mrs. Willows watches the residents going back inside and, tucking her hands into the pockets of her cardigan, shrugs and follows. Lying in her bed, warm and clean, Sarah looks up at Ellie.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry to be such a burden.
You're not a burden, dear.
Yes, I am. It just seems that every day a little piece of the world just kind of slips away.
And you hold on real tight to what you have.
I'm trying. I'm afraid that one day I'm gonna look at you and not know you.
I'll always be here for you. You know that.
Sometimes I think my Harvey is still alive. It's silly, I know. I can't remember what I had for breakfast, but I remember everything about him. I miss him.
I know. But you still have him in your heart. And as long as you keep him there, he'll never be gone.
Sometimes, when I dream, it's as if we really are together. I can hear his voice. I can feel his touch. I can even smell his cologne. I'd like to go to sleep now, if you don't mind.
I don't mind, dear.
Ellie kisses her fingers and lays them against Sarah's cheek before getting up from the edge of the bed and picking up the silver-framed photograph from Sarah's bedside table. She gives it to Sarah. Sarah gently runs her finger over the man's face and turns onto her side, snuggling into the pillow. A single tear rolls down her cheek as she closes her eyes, placing her hand on the photograph lying beside her. In the morning, Gideon watches Coleman fixing his gate.
It's not too sweet, is it?
No, it's not too sweet.
Mm-hmm. See, most people tell me my lemonade's too sweet, because I put a whole lot of sugar in mine. I knew it wasn't too sweet. You know, Gideon, I really like the way you look out for Addison and the others.
I like them very much.
Yeah? Well, you certainly have given them something, I tell you that much.
I have?
Yes. Yeah, dignity. Give me that Beware of Dog sign there.
Which one is it?
It's right there.
Gideon puts his lemonade down on a bench beside three signs. The Beware of the Dog sign is on top of the pile, but Gideon stares at them in confusion before picking them all up and turning back to Coleman. Gideon holds them out to him.
You can't read, can you?
No, I can't.
Gideon, do you know where England is?
No, I don't.
What's 5 + 5?
Gideon shrugs.
Oh, I'll be damned. You didn't fool all these people around here. You got these folks up here thinking you some kind of big-time genius or something. You don't even know what I'm talking about, do you?
No, I don't.
Oh, boy. This is beautiful. This is beautiful. Man, you are dumb as a rock, aren't you? Don't worry, Gideon. I won't tell a soul. It'll be just between me and you. All right? It'll be our secret. Boy, this is too much fun to watch.
Coleman puts his arm around Gideon's shoulders and they walk away. In reception at the home, the group is waiting.
Yeah, yeah.
Gideon, you're tardy. We've been waiting for you.
Come on. Come on. Ice cream. Ice cream. Come on.
They go to the diner and sit at the counter. Leo eats his ice cream in happy silence while beside him Addison and Ellie sit together gazing at each other. Suddenly, Billy Ray strides in.
Billy Ray, thank you not to make any trouble today.
I'm not going to make any trouble today. Hey, champ. Can I try that?
You really are a miserable little shit, ain't you?
Well, let me try yours.
I wouldn't do that.
Really? Why not?
Because I'll punch your lights out.
I'll flatten your head, old man.
Come on. Come on, I'm waiting.
Unknown to Harvey to fight, Gideon enters behind him. Billy Ray stares at Gideon in fear.
What, you afraid?
He sure looks afraid.
Gideon picks up a small dog and carries it outside.
Now you're gonna get it.
Ooh, ow, ow! You broke my nose. Well done.
Beautiful, beautiful.
That felt good.
Hello.
Is it from me?
No.
The old man goes sadly back to sleep in his chair.
I'm teaching Gideon how to knit.
That's nice, Sarah.
Oh, I forgot my sticks.
Your needles.
Leaving her wool strung around Gideon's hand, Sarah goes off in search of her needles. Gideon turns to Jean.
She's getting worse, isn't she, Jean?
I'm afraid so.
She really doesn't need to remember that much, does she?
No. She can't even remember what time dinner is or where her room is.
Gideon runs out with the wool looped around them and walks away, trailing a dangling ball of wool behind him. He walks into a room where Ellie is busy writing.
Ellie, could you write down something for me?
Why can't you write?
He walks round her and she sees his hands.
Because I can't write.
Oh, I see. Certainly.
Richard is about to leave when he sees Jean wearing a stunning black cocktail dress.
Where are you off to?
Nowhere.
Nowhere?
I have you seen Gideon?
You're going out with Gideon dressed like that?
No. Not exactly.
Well, which is it? Is it yes or no?
Yes.
See, you know, if you have feelings for him, why don't you just come out and say it?
Richard, goodness gracious.
Man, it looks a little bit strange, all dressed up, sneaking through the hallways.
I'm not
at
sneaking.
Night. What would you call it?
Walking.
You know, I asked Gideon if something was going on between you two, and he said yes.
Gideon said yes?
That's what he said.
Okay, Richard, what exactly did you ask him?
I asked him if he was making a play for you, and he said yes. Well, I'm glad you find this so funny. No. Go ahead, have a big laugh.
Richard, Gideon is making a play for me. Romeo and Juliet.
Romeo and Juliet?
if I didn't know any better, I would say you were jealous.
Well, maybe I am. I mean, maybe I'm just not very good at saying how I feel. No, I'm into it now. I might as well see it through. I care about you, Jean. I have ever since the first day you arrived here. And lately, I find that you occupy my thoughts more and more of the time. I mean, it's just driving me crazy. There, I said it. And I'm glad I did.
He turns around.
Look at you all. Thank you. Look at his face. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Mr. Barnes. Thank you, sir. You look beautiful.
Many happy returns.
Thank you, Mr. St. Clair. Gideon.
Happy birthday.
Tables in the dinner hall have been moved to one side of the room and draped with white tablecloths. On the long top table, there are dishes of food and a large bowl of punch. The residents pair off, and with the dignity of a dance hall era, they filter onto the dance area in the middle of the room. Gideon shuffles, short-stepping across the room to Sarah, who sits alone, dressed in a long, pale green evening dress.
I have something for you, Sarah. It's a reminder book. It has a map so you don't get lost again. It tells you what time meals are and what time your favorite programs are on.
He hands her a small booklet strung with a loop of ribbon at one corner, which he lays gently around her wrist.
Oh, thank you.
Ellie and Addison watch Sarah's reaction and beam with joy and pride at Gideon's gift. Leo stands at the top table pouring vodka into the punch bowl.
What in the world is going on here?
It's a surprise party. For me.
Oh, that's nice. You gave my son a party and forgot to invite me.
We wanted it to be a fun occasion.
Well, the occasion is now over.
Mother.
Richard, these people shouldn't be gallivanting around like this. They should be in their rooms, in their beds.
He's your tight-ass old Oberon.
How dare you talk to me that way, you vulgar old man. I want everyone in their rooms right now. This party's over.
No. The party is just starting, right?
You tell him, Harlan.
Richard.
It's just a little party.
You were hired to take care of these people. You're fired.
Now, wait a minute.
She is so fired.
You can't fire her.
I can do whatever I please.
Then I'll leave.
And I also.
Me too.
Sarah holds up her hand as well.
Good. I don't give a damn. We're selling this goddamn place.
Hey, how much do you want for the joint?
No, we're not going to sell it.
What?
I said we're not going to sell it.
Now, listen, last week...
No, Mother, shut up. I mean, you know, Leo's right. You are a tight-ass old broad.
Everyone struggles to stifle giggles as Mrs. Willows turns away, grabbing Leo's bottle of vodka.
Feels pretty good, eh, Doc?
Yeah.
Hey, come on, don't get discouraged. We're supposed to be having a party here. Yeah, put this music back on there. There it is now. Come on, everybody. Get up, grab a partner, and dance and have a good time. Oh, geez, that's a terrible thing you said to your mother.
Ellie watches the dancing, tapping her hand on one knee in time with the music. Addison watches her and tries to copy but cannot keep time. He looks nervously at her vibrantly happy face and leans towards her.
Would you care to dance?
Why, I'd love to.
They stand up, and in time-honored tradition, Addison takes her right hand in his left, and they begin to dance. Jean leads Coleman onto the dance floor. He keeps time, but only just under the influence of Leo's doctored punch. Harlan and Leo dance together. Harlan leads, as Leo has obviously been enjoying the punch as well. He hauls Leo back as the chef staggers. Gideon stands next to them, watching intently with a huge smile on his face. Richard cuts in on Coleman and Jean. Shaking the handyman's hand, he and Jean start to dance. Sarah is sitting alone, but she seems content watching everyone. Behind her, Gideon, dressed in his suit but wearing a bow tie and a huge smile, suddenly starts dancing on the spot. He shuffles round to the left, then back to Sarah and back to the left. Sarah seems oblivious to him, lost in the music. Above the gathering, a huge banner of cut-out capital letters proclaims, "Happy Birthday."
Can you feel it?
Feel what?
Youth.
Yes, I can. It started when he came.
I know.
You don't think it's some sort of...
magic?
Yes.
I don't know. All I know is I like it.
She gently takes his hand in hers and he looks up at her and covers her hand with his own.
I love you, Jim. I really mean it.
See the film from start to finish on Sky Movies.
Oh. You have this dance.
I have.
Slowly, Sarah stands up and takes Gideon's hand. She leads him onto the dance floor and rests her left hand on his right shoulder. He immediately puts his right hand on her left shoulder. Smiling, Sarah moves his hand gently down to her waist and they start to dance slowly across the floor. Gideon's eyes are focused on her feet and Sarah gently touches his chin, raising his head to face her. A dreamy look of happiness lights up her face as she moves and Gideon's eyes follow hers, a fixed, concentrating grin on his face. Slowly, Sarah raises his left hand and turns beneath it. Keeping his arm up in the air, Gideon does the same and Sarah waits for him to face her once more. Moving back together, a brightness enters their steps and they sashay over the floor with more confidence. Suddenly, Gideon looks up at the mirror above the fireplace and Sarah follows his gaze, watching their reflection as they dance. Sarah is transported back to an evening many years ago when she danced with her husband. They are dressed as in the photograph by her bed and sweep gracefully across the floor, dancing as close to one another as etiquette allows. Swinging round, the young Sarah leans back, bending at the waist, supported in her elegant glide by her partner, and she returns to the present. Stepping away from Gideon, still holding his hand, an ethereal look of peace and contentment in her eyes, she spins slowly round and curtsies. Gideon bows in turn, and she glides gracefully backwards and turns away. Gideon struggles to stand upright, his eyes fixed on Sarah as blood trickles from his nose. He collapses to the floor.
Gideon, we got your blood work back. You've got
leukemia. I know, Richard.
So that was the missing page from your medical file?
Yes.
Gideon, you should have told us about your condition.
Why?
So we could get you to a hospital.
I'm exactly where I need to be.
Hi, Gideon.
Hello, Harlan.
You gave us quite a scare.
Oh, I'm sorry. What are you doing in here, anyhow? I'm dying, Leo.
You can't die. You just got here.
Sitting alone in the rose garden, staring at the bleak cut stalks of the rose bushes, Addison is unable to join the others in Gideon's room. His shoulders are slumped and his fingers fiddle nervously with a crease in his trousers as Ellie sits down beside him.
He lied to us.
He protected us.
From what?
from ourselves. He knows we think of dying every day. I think he didn't want to be a burden.
Perhaps. Damned inconsiderate, if you ask me. He should have told us. Friendship depends on some degree of honesty.
Right now, your friend needs you, and you're sitting out here feeling sorry for yourself.
I am not feeling sorry for myself.
What would you call it?
I'm trying to make some sense out of this.
Why do you always have to analyze everything? There is no sense to make of it. It's life. Life doesn't always make sense. Addison, he loves you.
I feel great affection for him.
You can't even say how you feel about him, can you? With all the words at your command, that's the best you can come up with? Why can't you just say that you love him and you're hurt by losing a friend?
I believe I've stated my emotions quite plainly.
I've always admired you for your intelligence. And it's only just now that I realize what a silly old fool you are. Too prideful to open your heart. Too stubborn to open your eyes.
She stands abruptly and rushes away. Addison reaches for her but draws back his hand, thumping the stone bench in frustration, confused and anxious.
Coleman.
Is it for me?
Yeah, it's for you. It's your son.
Tell him I'll call him back.
Coleman stares at him in shock.
He said he'd call you back. Okay. Some strange people in here.
Jean sits beside Gideon's bed as Addison enters.
Hello, Addison.
Hello.
I was waiting for you.
Please, forgive my absence.
It's okay.
No, it's not. It was selfish. Inappropriate from a true friend. I thought I might read to you. I found it's a pleasant way to pass the idle hours.
Yes, I would like that.
I'll leave you two alone.
I'm glad you came, Addison.
So am I.
Gideon reaches slowly and painfully to his bedside table and picks up a small carved butterfly.
I want you to have this.
I can't take this.
Me neither. Not where I'm going.
Addison almost laughs, but sorrow darkens his smile and he gently lays the butterfly back on the table and picks up the book.
In the village of La Mancha, which I have no wish to remember, there lived, some time ago, one of those gentlemen who were wont to keep a lance in the rack, an old buckler, a lean horse, and a sleek greyhound.
That's a very big book, Addison.
Don Quixote.
Maybe you should have brought a smaller book.
Gideon looks calmly into Addison's eyes and his head rolls slowly sideways on the pillow. A wave of sorrow washes over Addison and he moves as if to stand but stops watching his friend. Slowly, Gideon's eyes close and his face relaxes. Addison's eyes glisten with pride and sadness and he reaches for Gideon, tenderly laying a loving hand on his face. Addison's eyes fill with tears.
Goodbye, my friend. We're here today to mark the loss of something new, but not long enough. Gideon was a unique young man who possessed an insight I have found in few others. I thought it was due to his intellect or his perceptive understanding of the human condition, but I was wrong. What it was that he listened. Whoever talked to Gideon knew that he was being heard. The measure of our lives does not depend solely on how we live, but how much we leave behind. Gideon touched all of us, each in different ways. And I'm proud to say that he was my friend. And I shall miss him dreadfully.
Unable to continue, Addison walks away from the lectern. Ellie and Sarah sit together watching him, and Ellie looks down as she remembers Gideon and shares Addison's sorrow. Sarah clutches her reminder book tightly, her eyes filled with sadness. After the service, Addison sits alone on the bench in the grounds. He holds the delicate butterfly carving, gently turning it in his fingers, lost in sorrow. Ellie walks up to him and lays a hand on his shoulder, surprising him out of his solitude.
Ellie.
Come on inside. It's cold out here.
Ellie. I love you. I realize that I've always loved you.
He gently touches her face and she draws him into a passionate kiss. Leo prepares a barbecue on the sunken patio, and Addison and Ellie join Harlan and Sarah at a table. They hold each other's hands and gaze into one another's eyes. In the rose garden, a single rose has blossomed into a vibrant pink flower among the barren bushes. It is Gideon's.
The future and the past won't matter anyhow, 'cause all we have and all we need is now.
The End, voiced by Marston York for British Sky Broadcasting.